The OTB Podcast Network. With Green Farm on the go. Snack smart with 100% natural protein-powered chicken bites.
It is 12 minutes past nine. Let's do Deal or No Deal.
I signed for them after the Euros. And after my first day's training, I was driving home. I was actually thinking,
regretting it.
What have I done? Like I walked into a circus.
It's amazing, isn't it?
Phil, good morning to you again. How are you?
How are you getting on, lads?
We'll get into all our deals here in a moment, but I do want to just bring up the Pep Guardiola pre-match press conference where he called Big Sam Allardyce a genius. Was this Pep super trolling by knowing full well that his team were in incredible form and they were going to kill a team who they had a little bit of revenge in the air against, that West Brom side who'd frustrated them so recently in a match? Was that what he was doing? Did he already know what the result was going to be? And he was like, oh, this guy's an absolute genius. Watch me tear him apart.
Well, Big Sam will be a genius if he keeps West Brom up by the looks of it. I mean, he kept them in the changing room for an hour after the game to tell them a few home truths. But going back to what Guardiola said, obviously it's 6 weeks since that one-all draw. And obviously the following day, Bilic was sacked. But what City have done since has been pretty remarkable because, you know, they obviously they had a few games called off, but they've kicked on since that first half against Chelsea, where they obviously had a break. It was a game postponed against Everton because of COVID, and they were unbelievable in that first half. And since then, they've shown exactly why they were the pre-season title favourites. And we kind of wondered that day at Stamford Bridge, was it a case of City are unbelievable again or are Chelsea really bad? I think the way things have transpired, a bit of both, where obviously City have gone on to win all their games and Chelsea have sacked Frank Lampard. But I think City would have known going into that game last night they were going to win. But sometimes as well, Pep says lovely things about managers because it's almost like Big Sam gets lulled into a false sense of security going, Pep ain't so bad. Maybe I won't park the bus as much as we usually do. And then, boom, Pep and City absolutely smashed them 5-0. And, you know, some of the goals you saw last night, you saw Mahrez scoring that classic goal that he scored the season Leicester won the league, where you know he's going to cut in on his left. You just can't stop him. Sterling with his customary pat miss from 2 yards out because Mahrez put it on a plate for him. And Gundogan's just gone to a different level in terms of his finishing.
Yeah. Looking really dangerous at the moment. And they, you know, if they get De Bruyne back in 5 or 6 weeks' time, all's going to be well. And maybe they'll get a striker in the form of the returning Sergio Aguero from COVID. So we'll see. Today's the 27th. Not long left. A couple of days left remaining in the January transfer window. The question that we asked in December has not been answered yet. Will Liverpool sign a centre-back? And what happens if they don't, Phil?
Well, I think it's too late now. Even if they sign a centre-back, the reason people were having this conversation in December, it was because they were dropping points. We mentioned West Brom. You think back to that game, the West Brom game, the one-all draw, where Joe Matip goes off in the game, and when he's off the pitch, West Brom get the equaliser. Looking at the league table now, Liverpool are obviously 7 points behind City. So just doing the looking at things, they've won those games. So think back to Liverpool obviously beat Spurs, then they go and they beat Palace. And you think, look at their fixtures. They've got West Brom. They obviously have Newcastle. They have Southampton, Burnley, and they have Manchester United. Say, for example, they don't beat United, but they win the other games. They're ahead of Man City. They're 4 points ahead of Man City with the same games played. But now they're 7 behind, and City obviously go to Anfield in a few weeks, but damage is done. Liverpool are not going to win the league. And a lot of it is down to, okay, the injury. Virgil van Dijk, at the start of the season, they took a calculated risk. Lovren had gone. They said, right, van Dijk never misses games. So it's van Dijk plus one. So you have van Dijk plus Joe Gomez. Joel Matip, I would always play ahead of Gomez, but obviously Matip is always injured. And then you have the option of playing Fabinho, which he played at Stamford Bridge when they won 2-0 earlier in the season, beside van Dijk, and he was excellent. But obviously Van Dijk gets injured and the plans go out the window. Now, what do you do? See, if you want to play centre-half for Liverpool, they're looking for a certain type of player. And the way they obviously want to balance the books, they don't want a stopgap where in 6 months' time their surplus to requirement, because Van Dijk is back and Gomez is back, and they're looking at this player that they've brought in as a stopgap, thinking, you know, we don't actually need you. But that's why people would suggest, why not just get a loan deal done? Because what you're taking away, obviously, from the fact that Fabinho is now playing as a centre half, he's done a very good job, but you're now missing that bite from Fabinho in midfield. And it was very noticeable the other day as well. Obviously, Reece Williams played, and I don't think the lad should be anywhere near the team, but that's where they're at the moment. But I still think Jurgen Klopp surely looks at that situation against Manchester United in the Cup game. Okay, I know it's only the FA Cup, but what are United brilliant at? They're brilliant at counter-attacking with space in behind them. Reece Williams is not as quick as Joe Gomez. He's not as quick as Virgil van Dijk. Surely you say to your centre-halves, just sit a little bit deeper and take away a bit of that space. I know you think back to the Arsenal game at the start of the season where Liverpool were, people were looking at that high line going, that is some of it, it's ballsy at times. But Klopp said after, you know, you look at the risk and reward is far greater. But that includes when you're playing Virgil van Dijk. Van Dijk ain't there anymore. So the risk and reward now, the balance has flipped there.
I mean, look, it's a question we can never know the answer to, but would a manager less wedded to his system have adapted differently than Klopp has adapted this year?
Well, I mean, Klopp is looking at the system that he's played and he said, you know, I've won the Champions League, I've won the Premier League, so why would it change anything? And I don't think it's a drastic change to say to your back four, just sit in a little bit.
Does that not then mean the gap between them and the midfielders is so big that there's space there and you get torn apart slightly differently? That, like,
no, I'm talking about bringing the whole unit back, because I know it obviously depends on, you don't want a gap between the midfield and defence.
You're bringing, so then you're not pressing anymore.
Well, you could still press, but maybe your press doesn't start as high up. You wait till that first ball is played into the midfield area and then you swarm the opposition then. I know Liverpool like to put you under pressure from very first ball played out by the goalkeeper. So, look, I think the encouraging thing from Liverpool's point of view, even if I don't think they're going to win the league this season, but it's not like previous times over the last 30 years where when things go wrong, you know, there's no sign of them kind of getting back up to that level. The bottom line is at the start of next season, they'll have Van Dijk back, and maybe they'll be a bit re-energized. Look what happened to City last season. They were way off Liverpool and they've regrouped. I just think if Liverpool had won those games and got ahead of City, it would have put them under a lot more pressure. But now City obviously looked around and they thought, nobody's really running away from this. City and United were both very slow out of the blocks. They started their season a week later than everyone. They didn't get the pre-season going as quick as the other teams as well. And now they're the two teams at the top of the league. But City look like they're just going from strength to strength. And they're 7 points ahead of Liverpool. They'll be further ahead.
We did say at the time that the right thing for Liverpool to do once they'd won the league was to stop chasing points totals and stop chasing anything. That's the point where they should have taken a bunch of their frontline players off at the end of last season. The league was won. Stop playing them in games. Put them on holidays. Bring them back for a full pre-season and get ahead of teams. They didn't do that. But I
don't think that's the problem, though, Gerard. I don't think playing them is the problem. I think the problem is when you don't play them. So, okay, they take them out for the end of last season and put all those point totals aside. The drop-off is still too much. As in, you say to your front three, okay, obviously they've brought Jota in, who's injured at the moment, but you take, say, Firmino and Salah out of the team and you're putting in the likes of Origi and Shaqiri. They're just not the same. You might get away with it in a one-off game. Like, you think back to the night that they beat Barcelona 4-0 and there was no Salah or Firmino, and Shaqiri and Origi came up with some big moments in that game. But over the course of, say, 5 or 6 games, you don't get away with it. The drop-off just is too much. And we've talked about this before at Liverpool. Their first 11, I still think if they have their fully fit first 11, they beat City in a one-off game.
It's a better game this season than it has been in recent years. One last point on this, right, is that I think they're really going to regret not making the signing at this point, because they're a club that has been so well run. When you're making the case that they'll have a spare wheel at the end of the year when Gomez comes back and when Virgil is back, that they'll have this other centre back if they were to buy somebody. But so what? They're really rich. They've had a brilliantly run transfer kitty and campaign over the last four or five seasons, where they've sold squad players for ridiculous amounts of money, and they will probably be able to do that again if they so desire, that they could have afforded to make the summer investment, bring it forward into whatever centre-back they're going to buy. So Upamecano is on our list here, that he's obviously a massive target now, obviously going to be linked with Tuchel straight away, and could be a transformative type of defender at a club like Chelsea. But maybe him plus Virgil is your defence of the future, and instead of waiting until the summer to spend that money, you spend it now, and if it doesn't work out now immediately, then at least you know what your centre-back partnership is going to be for the next five, six, seven seasons.
Yeah, I suppose with Upamecano, from what I see him, is a very raw player. And going back to what I was saying about the high line, you've got to be comfortable playing in a defence where there's a lot of space in behind you. A ball is going to be played over you. How do you react to that pressure, knowing that one slight mistake and the opposition are in? And some defenders just are not able to play that game. I suppose Liverpool are going to get a good look at Upamecano when they play Leipzig in the Champions League. And I would imagine he's not going anywhere between now and the end of the season. So maybe they look at him that night or over the two legs and they think, yeah, this guy has what it takes to be a Liverpool defender. But yeah, they could have fallen in the pecking order, because if he goes to Chelsea, he obviously gets to play with, you're looking at, say, he'd probably play with Thiago Silva. It'll be interesting to see how that Thiago Silva and Tuchel partnership, her relationship works. I know Thiago Silva said a few things after Tuchel was sacked by PSG. I don't think there was anything too controversial, and he just said it was predictable. But I mean, is that really that controversial?
It's like, no, and Christian Falk,
not controversial to say Tuchel's going to be sacked by Chelsea.
No,
in the future, we know that's going to happen.
Christian Falk was making the point on the show a little bit earlier on, though, that actually Tuchel was lobbying for a new deal for Thiago Silva, and that it didn't happen, and that was one of the reasons why, that was one of the fights that he had with Leonardo. So what should Tuchel's number one priority be as manager now, coming in and saying, whenever he has those angry conversations with whoever decides the transfer policy at Chelsea, what's he looking for?
I think he is actually looking for a centre-half, because I'm not convinced by Kurt Zouma, but it's also quite noticeable that they're not great on set pieces. Now, I sometimes attribute a team that's not good from set pieces as they're not set up properly, and that comes down to the coaching staff. And it touches on something that James Maddison said last week after they beat Chelsea. He said, we've watched Chelsea, we know they can nod off at times set pieces, which is not really a great endorsement for the Frank Lampard coaching ticket, that opposition players are saying, yeah, you go to sleep, and that's why they took a short corner, that's where the first goal came from. And obviously, they tried to sort out the goalkeeper, and Mendy started well, but in the last few weeks, but like every Chelsea player at the moment, none of them really are playing that well. Obviously, Kepa was thrown in for the Luton game and did what he's been doing for the last couple of years, let in a pretty bad goal. But I think centre-half is definitely a position. Thiago Silva is 36, so you know, he's not going to be around for much longer.
OK, let's fly through some of these. With experience at Chelsea and Derby County now on his CV, which is actually pretty short, Frank Lampard's sacking raises many questions. Will he have a new club by the start of next season? What level should he manage at next? And is there anybody who should be snapping him up?
This was my first thought when he got the Chelsea job, was when it goes wrong, because it goes back to, look, we know how things end with Chelsea. It's what you can do before it ends. And unfortunately for Frank Lampard, he hasn't done enough for other Premier League chairmen or owners to say, yeah, we'll give this lad a go. So does he go back to the Championship? How does he find that going back to the Championship after getting his dream job? And obviously he's not there anymore. Does he have to build himself back up? He had a season there with Derby, and people say, oh, he got to the playoffs. Derby got to the playoffs the season before, and Lampard came in and, you know, pretty much did the same. They got to the playoff final. One of the big pluses for them that season was Mason Mount, who he got on loan at Chelsea, from Chelsea. Obviously then, you know, quite fitting that he gave Mount the captain's armband for his last game in charge. We know that Frank Lampard is a fan, so it'll be interesting to see how Mason Mount gets on under Thomas Tuchel. But yeah, I'm sure, look, Mick McCarthy's taken charge of Cardiff tonight. He's got another championship job within a few weeks of being sacked by Applewell. So there will be clubs that will take a chance on Frank Lampard, but you know, There's only so many chances you can get.
Well, are there? He's English, so like, there's going to be loads of chances, right?
Well, he's got a lot of people batting for him in the media. Anyway, we've seen that from the last few days.
Okay, wouldn't we all love to see Lampard versus Gerrard in the next Old Firm?
Yeah, I mean, in fairness, it's been a while since we've had a discussion on who's better, Lampard or Gerrard. So at the moment, even if Lampard went to Celtic, Gerrard and Rangers are ahead of them, because the wheels have come off so badly for Celtic in the season that mattered most, and they've been an absolute shambles. But yeah, now is not the time to be going in as a Celtic manager. They look like they're sticking with Neil Lennon for the time being. I'm baffled by that. I can't believe he's still there, given, as I said, what was at stake for Celtic this season. But maybe that's something that would happen next season. But yeah, like, in fairness, you look at Brendan Rodgers did. He went to Celtic and kind of got his confidence back, and look how things have gone for him since. Maybe Lampard needs something away from England, but because you're Frank Lampard, the spotlight's always going to be on you.
Okay, so next one on our list here is Declan Rice. West Ham very happy about the fact that there's been regime change at Chelsea, because they believe this will signal the end of the club's interest. That's according to The Telegraph. He's under contract with West Ham until 2024. Do you expect him to be a West Ham player next season now?
At the moment, I think so, yeah. I think things are going well for West Ham. He's effectively become the captain, because Mark Noble's not getting into the team anymore. And I kind of feel with Rice, it could be a similar situation to Jack Grealish, where they're going to get priced out of it, other clubs, because they're going to put such a huge price tag on these players. And it's funny that these are two lads that could have played for the Republic of Ireland, that if they were playing for Ireland, their price tags would probably be half of what they are now.
So they could actually get the move to the dream club that they want. So yeah. the agents done them up like a kipper here.
The short-term greed. Yeah.
Oh, what a pity. They keep claim Spurs have expressed their interest in signing Di Maria when he becomes a free agent this summer. 32. Would bringing him back from PSG to the Premier League be a smart move by Mourinho?
It'd be a typical Mourinho move, where he just keeps adding to his squad. Not necessarily a player that's going to get into his team every week, but you look at the team that he fielded against Wickham the other night. Di Maria gets into that team, whether he can get into the Premier League starting 11. But certainly a player that would suit the way Mourinho likes to play, that play on the counter-attack. That's where he was so good for Mourinho at Real Madrid, where he... We've seen how good he's been at PSG since he went from Manchester United. So, yeah, like again, like with Mourinho, we know how it's going to end. And whoever comes in as the next Spurs manager is going to have some really good players.
What do you think that's going to happen soon?
With Mourinho?
Yeah.
This is his season. I don't think it'll go as well from next season. And then... That's probably it then with Mourinho for Spurs.
Okay. The paper also reports PSG will offer Julian Draxler, 27, in exchange for Matteo Guendouzi. Who'd win in that deal, Owen? Should Arsenal make that happen?
Oof, that's a good one. Guendouzi's been involved in another inside the club bust-up recently, hasn't he? Which doesn't necessarily paint things too well. Like, I think if Arsenal can be doing as much as they possibly can to get rid of Guendouzi, I think that's all the positivity that they need. I think that, like, you can make a case that he is a player who might start for Arsenal if he fulfills his potential over the next little while, but clearly the manager has made a decision on his future at the club, and he was in the same bracket as Mesut Ozil, where he doesn't really want him. So he's the boss, he's the gaffer, what he says goes, and what he says goes with Matteo Guendouzi is, I don't want you at my football club. So any win there where he's not an Arsenal player, I think, is probably, any situation where he's not an Arsenal player is probably a win.
Interesting to see Draxler in the Premier League as well. 34-year-old Edin Dzeko has fallen out with Roma and could be on his way back to the Premier League. Gazzetta dello Sport report that West Ham and Everton are keen to sign him. Should one of those clubs add him to their squad? Could he go to Manchester City? Where could he go?
I think West Ham would be a good move for him, because West Ham obviously are a little bit light up front. Obviously, Allaire is gone. Allaire was never an out-and-out striker. He was never your lone striker, and never was that more evident the night they went to Anfield, because Mikel Antonio was injured and Allaire stood there up front on his own, long balls played up to him, and Matt Phillips was made look like Franco Baresi. He just won everything in the air. Whereas Antonio obviously gives them a different dimension. But unfortunately for Antonio, just a few issues with his hamstrings. You tend to see that with explosive players where they pick up hamstring injuries. But Dzeko would certainly be a decent player to have. Obviously, good target man and a good finisher. And maybe he'd probably get more game time at West Ham than Everton. But Everton is an attractive proposition for a player right now. You get to play for Carlo Ancelotti and they're going well. And if you're up front, you're probably going to be playing in a two-man attack with Dominic Calvert-Lewin.
Yeah, or you they rest him and you replace him and you get to score some goals because that's the focal point of the attack. So, all right, good stuff, Phil. Thanks very much for that. Cheers.
Cheers,
today's Deal or No Deal.
The OTB Podcast Network with Green Farm on the go. Snack smart with 100% natural protein-powered chicken bites.